good in somebody who's evil. The place of somebody is good, of somebody who is good is in heaven. The place of somebody who is bad is in hell. Or to put it in other words, reward is something that should be given so somebody is good. Punishment is something which deserves to be and is suitable to somebody who is bad. If somebody is just, and we said that justice means to place everything in its own proper place, it means that this person should place the person who's good in heaven, he should place the person who's bad in hell. He should give the punishment to the being who deserves it, to the person who's good, and give the punishment to the person who deserves that, and that's the person who has done evil and who has committed a crime. This is one meaning of judicial justice. Another meaning is this, that punishment should only be given when the person has disobeyed the order, after the order has been given to the person and has been explained to the person. It's not suitable for punishment to be meted out and given to the servant before the servant has been properly explained his duty and his responsibility, and the servant has disobeyed the responsibility he has been given. Now, this is, you might say that this is something very self-evident, and what's the necessity of explaining it? While this is true, that this is something very self-evident, but this is one of those things that nevertheless has very profound effects on the extraction of Islamic laws from their sources. Our scholars, our jurisprudents, our fuqaha, and our mujtahideens, they use this principle in many places to extract Islamic laws from their sources, which is, of course, outside of the scope of our discussion, because we want to keep this discussion in a very simple level. Keep bearing in mind the fact that a lot of our listeners aren't Islamic scholars. They're common people who want to have some information about Islamic topics. So in conclusion, we can say that justice means to place something in its own proper place. This very universal and general meaning has three basic categories, or three, it manifests itself in three ways. There's a cosmological justice, which means to create something in the way that's suitable to it, to give it everything that it deserves and that are suitable to it. There's a legislative justice, which refers to the fact that the laws which are necessary for a person or a group of human beings and are suitable for them should be given to them. And then finally, there is a judicial justice, that following the bestowal of this law, if certain people perform certain laws, they should be rewarded for them. If they are not, they should be punished for them. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were examining the meaning of justice and its categories. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
The Light.
A muralist from Greece is blending mythology with graffiti and street art to depict how COVID-19 has impacted lives around the globe. Ficus Antonius has painted the walls of many cities around the globe. He is now in the Cypriot capital, Nicosia, to continue his work. His latest artwork depicts Americus, a Cypriot mythical figure who was punished by the gods and turned into a plant. The Greek artist believes this theme is similar to the situation people around the globe have experienced since the pandemic began. He explains many people have grown roots because they're staying in one place for so long. Two British artists have brought a combination of fun art and environmental concerns. concerns to the sidelines of the G7 summit. They have created a modern-day version of famous sculpture carved into America's Mount Rushmore. This time, it's called Mount Recyclemore. Joe Rush and Alex Rakic have made a sculpture of G7 leaders with electronic waste. They say their major goal is to raise awareness about the amount of unrecycled tech and gadgets, the damage they cause to the environment, and the ways to combat the issue internationally.
Well, what I'd like them to do, the leaders of the G7 conference, is I'd like them all to talk to each other and work out a plan that isn't just shifting the problem from one country to another, you know, but actually is a plan that we all work on together, which is how to deal with this waste and how to stop producing so much waste and how to recycle things. And all these issues have got to be dealt with globally. They can't be dealt with nationally because that's where the problem is. So we need them all to get together, like we've put them together here, and deal with the problem.
The United Nations says 53 million tons of electronic waste are generated annually all over the world. It estimates that the amount of the waste will double in less than 30 years. If that happens, electronic waste would become the fastest growing waste stream in the world. Advanced robots are increasingly helping humans in a variety of innovative ways. Now, they have found a place in the healthcare system and will help nurses and doctors stay safe during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I can do all kinds of things for elderly people. I can visit with people and brighten their day with social stimulation, entertain and help guide exercise, but also can do talk therapy, take bio readings and help healthcare providers assess their health and deliver treatments.
Grace, which is the newest humanoid robot to join the healthcare fleet. This intelligent machine can take temperatures and record other vital signs of patients. It has been designed in a way to also interact with the elderly and those isolated by the pandemic. Grace is a new prototype of celebrity humanoid robot, Sophia, created by a robotic team in Hong Kong.
So we designed Grace to look professional in a healthcare setting. So that would mean so that she would resemble the sort of human-like appearance of healthcare staff. And so then this would facilitate more natural interactions. A human-like appearance facilitates trust and facilitates a natural engagement because we're wired for human face-to-face interactions. That's just the way human beings are.
Hansen, a while standing between Sophia and Grace, also said that both robots could speak different languages. He said Grace's creation was aimed at relieving the burden of frontline hospital staff dealing with COVID-19 patients. The company is planning a mass production of Grace and offers them to the market by August. The cost of making this robot is similar to a luxury car, but the cost is likely to decrease once the company begins manufacturing it in thousands. A tiny worm has wriggled back to life after lying frozen for 24,000 years in the permafrost land of northern Siberia. The organism was recovered from soil samples taken from 3.5 meters below the ground in Russia's Yakutia region. It's a multicellular organism that can withstand extreme cold. This ancient worm has broken the record for the longest living abeloid rotifer worm. Previous research suggests that it could survive for a decade when frozen. Earlier, scientists also discovered 30,000-year-old microscopic worms from northern Siberia.
A herd of wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Australian scientists have discovered one of the world's largest ever dinosaur species in the Erromanga area in outback Queensland. Research shows the plant-eating sauropod lived between 92 million and 96 million years ago when Australia was attached to Antarctica. Paleontologists estimated the dinosaur was as long as a basketball court and as tall as a two-story building. That makes it the largest dinosaur ever found in Australia and one of the top five largest ones in the world. Bones of the dinosaur were first uncovered more than a decade ago by cattle farmers. Iranian capital Tehran has hosted a festival of cake sculptors. The event showcases delicious sweets that are carved into eye-catching sculptures. Yusuf Jalali has more.
It's not a piece of cake to bake a sculpture, but pastry chefs here have made it. In the fourth festival of cake sculptures in Iran, sugarcraft artists from across the country have come under one roof in Tehran to cast their spell on these sweets and carve a wide range of fascinating 3D figures out of them. From this tasty coronavirus to this beautiful angel that is picking up the only eatable trash in the world.
Here you can see this angel, which represents the innocent heart of labor children, collecting pieces of trash that contain some of the simplest dreams of a labor child, such as quality food, books, and toys.
My cake is made based on what we call installation art. I have put together iconic structures and monuments of Iran, but when you take a look at them from a special angle, you can see Iran's map.
Some of the cake sculptures here have really pushed the envelope of the art of sculpting, like this bust that shows the 13th century Persian poet Rumi, surrounded with a heavenly garden that's decorated with intricate and mind-boggling details. It took its creator almost a month to finish it.
In the middle, I have put the bust of Rumi, who we refer to as Maulana in Iran. He's holding his most significant verse work, Masnavi Manavi. The garden I created around him and the birds here all are inspired by his poems.
Organizers say they hold the festival every year to modernize the confectionery industry and combine it with fine arts to make it more appealing to the public.
500 works are showcased here in four sections. Bust cakes, wedding cakes, cookie cakes, which are made using royal icing, and the fourth section is cream cakes. The major goal is to scout for talents who can revolutionize the confectionery industry.
Some of the participants in the festival are pastry chefs who try to make their cakes look better, and others are actually pro sculptors who want to bake a figure instead of carving it. Perhaps it's easy to tell who is who by taking a glimpse at their cakes. But sweets will win the competition. They're both delicious and delicate.
It takes ultimate care and a knack for both bakery and artistry to be able to transform sweets into statues. In fact, they're both so spectacular and yummy that make you want to have the cake and eat it too. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Nowadays, phone addiction is causing an increasing number of accidents worldwide. A Korean engineer has come up with a creative, although satirical, way to tackle that issue. Pang Min-wook is a 28-year-old industrial engineer or designer. He has invented a robotic eyeball people can wear to avoid accidents when using their phones while walking. The device is strapped to the forehead and opens its eyelids when the user lowers their heads. The third eye then beeps in warning when the user comes within 1 or 2 meters of an obstacle. Pang says his device is not a solution to the issue and hopes that people will understand the severity of their reliance on gadgets when they see their third eye.
As the coronavirus continues to wreak havoc in India, some auto rickshaw drivers have turned their three-wheelers into makeshift ambulances to provide patients with first aid services.
Those are patients.
In New Delhi, the municipal ambulances are often occupied. There are also some very narrow alleys or built-up areas that are inaccessible by regular-sized ambulances. In these cases, our makeshift ambulances came in handy then. We attend to people in need with oxygen cylinders.
Mishra, who started the Rickshaw Ambulance Initiative, says his center attends around 1,200 calls per day. He says rickshaw volunteers transport roughly 150 patients during peak hours. The brave drivers work 12-hour shifts and mainly serve people with mild symptoms. They wear full protective gear, including face shields, while on duty. The three-wheeler ambulances are easily identifiable by the large printed image of the fleet and emergency call numbers. Mishra says the fleet will continue running with all its might until the coronavirus is under full control in India. In Russia, drone enthusiasts have gathered in the capital, Moscow, to show off their technological creativity in a racing competition. The participants created their own drones and made changes to the models right on the site where the competition was held to improve their chances to win the contest. The goal was for the participants to complete the track in the shortest possible time. Participants say the interesting thing about the competition is that it's cheaper than other games.
It's a lot of fun. From the outside, it may not be so clear, but when you're inside it, it becomes really fun to talk, race with the competitors, learn from their experience some new technological things. As for the high cost, it is expensive, but when compared with the snowboards and skis, it is really cheaper, but more expensive than knitting.
In 2017, the International Federation of Aeronautics, or FAI, announced drone racing as an official sport. In 2018, Russia's sports ministry included drone racing in all Russian register of sports with a class code F3U following the FAI classification.
A science professor has released spectacular drone footage of lava streaming from an Icelandic volcano. Sørensen Johnson flew a drone over the volcano 2 months after it started erupting. He captured close-up shots of lava bubbling in its crater in the southwest of Iceland's capital. The volcanologists say that they have no idea how long this eruption will continue, adding that magma could flow for years. Iceland is home to dozens of active volcanoes. Volcanic landscapes have turned into a tourist attraction in the Scandinavian country.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Two Russian cosmonauts have conducted spacewalk outside the International Space Station to prepare an old docking module for disposal. The duo spent more than 7 hours outside the ISS to wrap up preparations for the eventual disposal of the Pris docking compartment. According to NASA officials, the Russian cargo freighter We'll remove the two-decade-old module from the orbiting laboratory later this summer. Both the cargo ship and the press will burn up in the atmosphere above the Pacific Ocean. The orbiting press will clear the way for the arrival of a new Russian multi-purpose laboratory module named Nuka, meaning science in Russian. Nuka is scheduled to launch on July the 15th this year. Wednesday's operation was the sixth spacewalk in 2021 in support of the space station assembly, maintenance, and upgrades.
A rare albino baby elephant that was rescued from poachers in South Africa has found a new home with a welcoming herd. The calf, named Han Yisa, was caught in a snare in the Kruger National Park when she was only 4 months old. She suffered several nasty wounds, including one to her mouth. Han Yisa remained trapped in the snare for 4 days before being rescued and taken to a shelter especially built for elephants northeast of Johannesburg. All the other elephants there are orphans too.
Each female that we had has a baby. So except for them, all of the others are orphaned. And I think that is part of the reason why they accept these orphans, because they know how it feels, you know, and they become actually, you know, the mother figures for them.
The calf has learned to adapt to the new life. She lies under the shadow cast by bigger elephants to protect herself from getting sunburned. The shelter says if the herd grows too big for the area, she and other elephants will be released into the wild.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Brothers and sisters, thank you so very much for joining us on today's episode of The Lantern, brought to you by the one and only IRIB English Radio. There's a concept in the Holy Book of Quran, which has been repeated in several verses and occasions, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in a sense, compares our time in this world and the objective of achieving felicity and prosperity for our hereafter to a test, a tournament. And by doing so, he encourages us to be wassabiqoon as-sabiqoon. Let's listen to a short story regarding this matter for a better understanding of what we're talking about, and we're going to be right back. Stay with us.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, salam and so welcome to your program, Lantern. We have another special story for today. Let's listen to it. The Three Races is the title of today's story, dear friend. In old times, fable retells the story of young athletic boy hungry for success, for whom winning was everything. One day, the boy was preparing himself for a running competition in his small native village, himself and two other young boys to compete. The race commenced looking like a level heat at the finishing line, But sure enough, the boy dug deep and called on his determination, strength, and power. He took the winning line and was first. The crowd was ecstatic and cheered and waved at the boy. The wise man remained still and calm. A second race was called, and two new young fit challengers came forward to run with the little boy. The race was started, and sure enough, the little boy finished first once again. The crowd was ecstatic again. The wise man remained still and calm. The little boy, however, felt proud and important. Another race, pleaded the little boy. The wise old man stepped forward and presented the little boy with two new challengers, an elderly lady and a blind man. What is this? Quizzed the little boy. This is no race, he exclaimed. Race, said the wise man. The race was started, and the boy was the only finisher. The little boy was ecstatic. The crowd, however, was silent. What has happened? He asked the wise old man. Race again, replied the wise man. This time finish together, all three of you, continued the wise man. The little boy thought a little, stood in the middle of the blind man and the old lady, and then took the two challengers by the hand. The race began, and the little boy walked slowly, ever so slowly, to the finishing line and crossed it. The crowd were ecstatic and cheered.
The lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
So basically in life, we all, no, I personally am not a competitive person at all, but we still are, whether we're competitive or not, in some sort of race, whether it's a race against time, it's a race against our age, it's a race against the odds of life, whether it's a race against the obstacles and different events that block our path towards success and achievement. We're all racing against something, right? And most often, we are racing against ourselves. We're competing against our old self, our previous self, against our failures, our demons, that dark voice in our head that eats us up from the inside and sometimes keeps us up at night, telling us that we're going to fail, we're going to disappoint others, we're not going to make it. We're competing against that too, right? We're battling with it. We're racing against it. Trying our best to put every ounce of energy we have to keep moving forward so that these dark voices and these demons and these things that constantly try to weigh us down can't catch up with us. And we often have to do it in regard with any sort of achievement, whether it's this worldly or it's an achievement for the hereafter. We have to fight and swim against this strong current that wants to push us backwards. Now, this current can be a lot of things. It can be haters, other people who want to see us fail because it makes them feel better about themselves, seeing us in a low place, thus they would not have to try so hard to achieve anything. The strong current can be the temptations and the whispers of the devil, who, as the Quran says, is constantly scaring us and threatening us and promising us poverty and doom and disappointment, From the first day of our creation, from the first day of the creation of mankind, our ancestor Adam alayhi salam, the devil was constantly trying to, you know, bring us to our lower selves, constantly deceiving us and lying to us and manipulating our thoughts and our beliefs for us to stoop deeper and deeper, for us to fall into this whirlpool of abyss and distress and disappointment and hopelessness, as it did to Nabi Adam, our father, alayhi salam. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala evidently warns us about these schemes of the devil in the Quran in countless occasions. He is constantly telling us that beware of the plots of your greatest enemy, know that he's your greatest enemy, know that he will try to attack you from every direction in order to bring you down, in order to discourage you and bring down your morale and motivation. And another thing that is constant, that is often a component in that strong current that is pushing us away from our objective, is our own lower selves, our nafs. That's all the time we have for today's episode of The Lantern. I hope you guys enjoyed our discussion today, and I wish to be with you again soon in the next segment of the show. Until then, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the VIRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll be discussing the commentary of the 23rd chapter of the Holy Quran, Suratul Mu'minun, or the Believers. Now let's just listen to the related verses, and then we'll be back. So stay with us.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
ثُمَّ أَنشَأْنَا مِن بَعْدِهِمْ قَرْنًا آخَرِينَ.
Then we produced after them a generation of others.
فَأَرْسَلْنَا فِيهِمْ
We sent among them a messenger from themselves, saying, Worship Allah, you have no deity other than Him, then will you not fear Him?
So we are now into the 31st and 32nd verses of this chapter. ثُمَّ أَنْشَأْنَا مِنْ بَعْدِهِمْ قَرْنًا آخَرِينَ. Then after them we produced another generation. فَأَرْسَلْنَا فِيهِمْ رَسُولًا مِّنْهُمْ أَنْ يَعْبُدُوا اللَّهِ مَا لَكُمْ مِنْ إِلَهٍ غَيْرُهُ أَفَلَا تَتَّقُونَ. So we sent among them a messenger from among themselves, saying, Worship Allah, you have no other God besides Him, will you not keep from evil? So in the 31st verse, the Almighty Allah says, ثُمَّ أَنْشَأْنَا مِنْ بَعْدِهِمْ قَرْنًا آخَرِينَ. Then after them we produced another generation, which means by the next verse where it says فَأَرْسَلْنَا فِيهِمْ رَسُولًا, that as His way of treatment, the Almighty Allah has appointed a prophet for every nation, and every nation has had a leader from the time of the creation. But the very aim and purpose of sending prophet among the nation is that they may follow, is that they may keep from evil by following the steps and path of the Prophet. So this necessitates the fact that the Prophet must be from among the people themselves. And that's why the verse says, فَأَرْسَلْنَا فِيهِمْ رَسُولًا مِّنْهُمْ. So the Prophet must be from among the people themselves, so that they have a practiced and forbearing example among them. And these verses discuss upon the nations that have come after Noah and explain their gloomy fate. And they also point to one important point. They show that the logic of the believers of later generations were similar to those of the former generations. So anyway, at first the verse says, ثُمَّ أَنْشَأْنَا مِنْ بَعْدِهِمْ قَرْنًا آخَرِينَ. Then after them we produced another generation. The Arabic word قَرْن is derived from the word اقتران, which means proximity. Therefore, the generation that lives in a particular single age is called a قرن, and sometimes the time characterized by certain generation in Arabic is called a قرن as well. The measurements of the length of a قرن as 30 to 100 years is only a convention and is dependent upon the traditions of various nations. But this does not constrain the meaning that we mentioned. Then, the next holy verse implies that since man cannot be without a divine leader, Allah sent a great prophet to them that he would teach them monotheism, the religion of truth and justice, and would call the people to the Almighty Allah. And the verse says, فَأَرْسَلْنَا فِيهِمْ رَسُولًا مِّنْهُمْ. And we sent among them a messenger from among themselves. أن يعبدوا الله ما لكم من إله غيره. He said, worship Allah, you have no other God besides Him. This is what has formed the basis of the call of all divine prophets. Indeed, it has been the call of monotheism that formed the main structure of all individual and social reformations. And then the prophet asks the question whether they would not shun polytheism and idol worship. When they are called to monotheism, will you not keep from evil? أَفَلَا تَتَّقُونَ.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
we
approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
The Prophet and the nation to which it had been sent have not been identified in the Holy Quran, but with regards to their identities in other verses of the Holy Quran, there are two possibilities offered by the commentators. The first possibility, been mentioned that it was the people of Thamud who used to live in an area located in the north of Hijaz, whose prophet was Salih, a great divine prophet that was appointed to guide those people, and they disbelieved in his message and rebelled and were finally destroyed by a heavenly cry or a deadly thunderbolt. The second possibility is that it was the people of Ad whose prophet was Hud, and their story is told in other verses of the Holy Quran immediately after the story of Noah. And this could be counted as an evidence, and it makes it possible to interpret this holy verse in this way. But when we consider that this nation's punishment was a very fierce wind that continued for 7 nights and 8 days, and it completely destroyed them, as verses 6 and 7 of chapter Al-Haqqa have mentioned, it becomes clear that the first interpretation is more correct. And the evidence of this interpretation, that it was the people of Thamud who lived in north of Hijaz, is the punishment of the cry which was mentioned at the end of the holy verses under discussion. And it is also found in Surah Hud, which clearly is about the people of Saleh. Anyway, we see what the reaction of this obstinate nation was to this great prophet's call of monotheism. So stay with us in the next program. Thank you, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
As the war in Yemen is raging on, the Saudi-led coalition is getting to the end of its tether in the face of Yemeni resistance groups, above all the Ansarullah movement. The Saudis have now to meet their nemesis at home in what many expect to be the final stages of the bloody war, not least because the Saudis and their accomplices have been enervated in a war of attrition they kindled 6 years ago. Not surprisingly, as one of their last-ditch attempts to save face, the Saudis are now busy issuing denials of heavy defeats on the front lines, and at the same time fabricating feats for their crestfallen forces. Recently, the Yemeni army and the fighters from the popular committees released new videos of a major operation carried out on May 28th against the Saudi kingdom's forces and mercenaries.
The operation was quite exceptional because it was extremely well fought. It is on the territory and high ground that the Saudis were in control of, and the large number of Saudi and Sudanese and other Yemeni who support the Saudis and are considered as a mercenary, the large number and the high equipment quality that they had did not prevent Ansarullah from occupying it.
The Yemeni's Al-Masira television channel reported that in the operation, sensitive targets were hit across the three strategic mountainous areas of Jabal Abdud, Al-Rami, and Jafan in the southern Saudi region of Jizan. According to the report, more than 80 mercenaries were killed, and at least 32 armored vehicles were damaged. The Yemeni forces reportedly managed to take full control of dozens of sites in the Saudi region after the mercenaries, who included Sudanese forces, were pushed back. Yemeni forces managed to seize control of at least 40 sites in the mountainous region, after which the Saudi Air Force sent warplanes that inflicted damage on their own military equipment. Given the recent achievements in southwestern Saudi Arabia, Yemen's Supreme Political Council has announced that the Yemeni side is prepared to exchange the bodies of those killed during the operations with Saudi Arabia. The Yemenis have stepped up their retaliatory attacks on Saudi Arabia in recent months, saying they will continue unabated as long as Riyadh carries on with its bombardment and blockade.
We saw the number of the Houthis was inferior to the number of the people, the Saudis and the Sudanese and the other occupying the position. And that also another lesson to learn from the military tactic point of view. And we saw that the light infantry can really defeat highly equipped forces when they're not motivated, they are not the owner of the ground, and they are there because they've been told that they want to occupy a foreign territory. However, we saw from Ansarullah Houthis, they are the owner of the ground, and this is what permit them to think less about the sacrifices they need to undergo in order to recover their own territory and liberate it from the Saudi occupation.
Meanwhile, the spokesman for the Yemeni Armed Forces, Brigadier General Yahya Sari, recently announced that the army troops and allied fighters from popular committees have hit sensitive targets in King Khalid Air Base in the Saudi city of Khamis Mushayt, some 884 kilometers south of the Saudi capital, Riyadh. The overnight attack was carried out by two of the country's domestically developed Asif-2K, Stryker-2K combat drones. Earlier this year, Yemen's Air Force carried out a number of operations against sensitive and important sites in Saudi Arabia, including Abha International Airport.
This is was very clear that there is an axis of the resistance that is coordinating its knowledge at passing on information and sharing experiences. The attack that Ansarullah carried out reminded me of the same attacks Hezbollah used to carry out against the Israeli occupation of the south of Lebanon in the 90s. However, now today, with modern equipment, with anti-tank missiles, and with more advanced knowledge on how you occupy a high ground, particularly from the war that Hezbollah was engaged in Syria to liberate the Syrian territory from the Takfiri extremists. And we saw this happening on the Syrian-Lebanese borders. We saw this happening in the Kalamun area in Syria. And we saw exactly the more or less the same reproduction in Jizan and on high ground. Therefore, the simple conclusion is there is a shared experience among the axis of the resistance, and Ansarullah are part of this axis, and they are learning from those members who have been through the same experience, and they're implementing it, and it resulted successfully.
In one of its latest articles, Foreign Policy has analyzed the situation in Yemen, saying Yemen's popular Ansarullah movement won the U.S.-sponsored war waged by Saudi Arabia, stressing that the losers are now in no position to dictate terms to the victors. It said Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman launched the offensive on the assumption that it would bring an easy victory. Instead, it became a public relations debacle, as Saudi Arabia not only publicly brutalized a desperate and impoverished population, but also proved incapable of defeating a ragtag group of rebels, despite billions of dollars of U.S. military hardware. The Saudis' recent willingness to negotiate a ceasefire reflects their weakened position.
The Saudis, they thought they're coming to a ground, to a territory that is on a promenade, and they will finish the war in a few weeks. This is what Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman said at the beginning, and that was 6 years ago. And we understand today that this war is exhausting the Saudis' resources, and it's giving no results at the exception of destroying Yemen and creating the largest humanitarian crisis in the poorest country of the Middle East. However, this Saudi attempt to continue and not to back off in their failed attempt to occupy Yemen, it is something that the Saudis, I think, are thinking about carefully, and because the results are very slim or no results at all.
In reaction, the Saudis are claiming that all the attacks and defeats are fabricated by the Ansarullah movement.
a statement that does not hold much water, given all those footage and documents released by the Yemeni side. Through downplaying the achievements of the Yemeni side, the Saudis are seeking to salvage their reputation. After all, who would take seriously a kingdom which cannot win a war against the poorest forces of Yemen, in spite of having a coalition on its side, a bunch of world powers in its camp, and an arsenal worth billions of dollars at its disposal?
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is your host Haider Bahatli and your program Q&A on Islamic Beliefs, broadcasting from IRIB English Radio. Today we have our dear esteemed guest, Sheikh Murtada Karimi. Sheikh Murtada, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Sheikh, now we have a question regarding who enters paradise and who does not. And the question is as follows. If someone doesn't pray his daily obligatory prayers, but on the other hand, he prays, he gives a lot of charity and build hospitals and help poor people and orphans, etc., etc., but he's not able to pray his daily five prayers, does he enter paradise or not? We don't want to make ourselves, astaghfirullah, judges here. This is not our job, but we want to elaborate to our listeners how this complication is.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So apparently we are talking about a Muslim, because the question is about a person who does not say prayer, meaning that he's a Muslim or she's a Muslim. They believe in the fact that they need to say the prayers, but for any reason they abandon saying the prayers. As you mentioned, I think this is the most important point, that we are not able to judge about the fate and destiny of the people in the hereafter. Even we are not, religiously speaking, we are not able to judge about, for example, atheists nowadays. Mm-hmm. We are not able to judge about Christians, Jews, Muslims, mm-hmm. Shias, and Sunnis, and so on and so forth, because of many reasons. First of all, we can imagine of some Muslims who claim to be Muslim. Seemingly they are acting upon their obligations, but they are suffering from some spiritual diseases and illnesses, and some of them, for example, they end up at least going through some punishments in mm-hmm. the world of Barzakh, for example, in the grave. And we can think of, for example, some people who are not even Muslim, as I mentioned, they might be atheists. First of all, they may have what we call it a good ending. Mm-hmm. Maybe before their death, few seconds before their death, they mm-hmm. come to this understanding, they convert to the religion of Islam that we believe is the true path, and without doing even one rak'ah of prayer, they will go to paradise. It is possible. Mm-hmm. It has happened in the history of Islam.
Because they converted and died as believers in God.
Yeah, and we know that it's al-Islam yajubu ma qabla or yajubu qabla. When you become a Muslim, it's not necessary for you to do what you didn't do before that, like the misprayers.
Islam will compensate everything before.
It's not necessary, yeah.
Exactly.
Of course, again, I'm just telling you some cases. It doesn't mean that this is the case for all the people. The other point is that we can think of some Christians, Jews, and other people who do not believe in the religion of Islam,